Hi, I'm Coach John Cook, and this is the Basketball and Life Podcast. My guest for today's episode is Doug Billman. Doug is the head boys basketball coach at Antwerp High School in Antwerp, Ohio. He's got 25 years of coaching experience, spent 17 of those years as a head boys basketball coach, 10 years as the head coach at Bryan High School, and the last 7 at Antwerp High School. In those 17 years, he's won 2 league titles while at Bryan High School and 2 more while at Antwerp High School. His teams have won 20 games or more for 4 consecutive seasons, with 3 district championships and 1 trip to the state Final Four in 21-22. He's got 221 career wins, 131 of those while at Antwerp. And I think Coach would be the first to tell you that all of those things are unimportant compared to the job that he has in leading young men and shaping the lives of the people that he coaches every day and is around every day in his classroom. I thoroughly enjoyed my conversation with Doug Millman. I hope you enjoy my talk with Coach about basketball and life. Hi, I'm Coach John Cook, and this is Basketball and Life. The podcast has a new name, but the guests are new, and hopefully the stories are really, really good. They always have been, and I think they will be, and I'm thrilled today to be joined by Doug Billman. Doug is the head basketball coach at Antwerp High School in Antwerp, Ohio, and I had the good fortune of meeting Coach not this basketball season, but past basketball season during the tournament, and had been aware of Doug for a long time and kind of followed his team's progress, but never got to meet him until the last year and a half or so, and I'm really feel fortunate to get to meet Coach, and even more fortunate that he's agreed to be on the podcast and join us today. Doug, how's it going?
Doing well, Coach. I appreciate the opportunity. I've been listening to your podcast, been following you from afar via social media and things to that nature, and like you said, I had the pleasure of meeting you just a few years ago, and the stories that have been told on this podcast have been absolutely fantastic, and beyond blessed just to be a part of this, and excited to talk some hoops and talk about my little journey in basketball.
Well, I am a huge believer, as I've done more of this, that as much as I love basketball, and the X and O conversation has its niche somewhere, and there are a lot of guys that do it, and we may get into some of that, but as this podcast has evolved, it's become evident to me that it's always been about more than just talking hoops, because everybody that's given any part of their life to this game has a good story, great story, and every story is a unique story. So that's really kind of how things have evolved, and I don't know exactly where the conversation will go, but I just want to give you a chance to tell your story and then tie in the life part of it, because probably more than anybody else that I've had on the podcast, or at least as much as anybody else I've had on the podcast to this point, I am incredibly curious to hear your discussion about balancing basketball and life. And we'll get to that later in the podcast, and I can't wait to hear what you got to say. But before we get too much further, why don't you just share with our listeners a little bit about your background? Who's Doug Billman? Where'd you grow up? What was your early basketball life like, and how'd you end up taking this pathway to coaching?
Yes, been kind of interesting, just like anybody else. So just the path through coaching is has ups and downs. But my love for basketball started really when I was young. Growing up here in Antwerp, I'm an Antwerp alum. And truthfully, I didn't think I would ever be back here coaching, and I can get into that here in a little bit, but I'm thrilled to be back here at my alma mater. But growing up through life, I had an older sibling and had an older brother and had a younger brother, and we grew up playing sports just like everybody and anybody else. Basketball really has kind of just ran through our family. It's just the love of basketball. And, my parents never coached. They played, and our entire family has enjoyed basketball and really athletics in general. But no one really ever coached other than, the casual coaching of a little league baseball team or something to that nature. But we've always had a ton of interest in athletics. And I guess basketball really started to generate with me in the fifth and sixth grade years of playing. I had a best friend growing up through high school by the name of Ryan Bagley, and him and I just kind of latched onto each other, and basketball was our main thing where, we can continue to play and challenge each other as we went through high school together. And played 4 years of varsity here at Antwerp for 2 different head coaches. Dan Giancola was my first, was the first head coach here for 3 years. I played under him for 3 years. And then Tim Clemens, and a lot of Archer fans know that name of Tim Clemens, a He had some really great runs in the mid to late 80s here at Antwerp, and then took some time off and then came back, and I was fortunate enough to play for him for a year. And that got me started in you know, just the understanding of what it meant to try to prepare and what teams look like and things like that. That side of coaching, I really started to dive in a little bit more when I was a senior in high school. But, from there, I had really gone on, and I thought I was going to play college basketball at Defiance College, and that was the plan. When I decided that I was going to go to D.C., I thought, hey, I'm going to go there and play basketball. And that was one of the big reasons why I decided to choose DC. But the coaching bug, I know you on this podcast, you talk about that coaching bug. It got me pretty early, Coach. And I started coaching here at Antwerp in my alma mater, started coaching football right out of high school. And I thought, wow, if I'm really enjoying coaching football this much, there's no doubt I'm going to enjoy coaching basketball. And I decided not to play basketball at DC, and I got going in coaching when I was a freshman in college, and really that started a trend towards coaching that I didn't know was going to take me, and it took me here.
So when you mention the coaching bug, yeah, obviously it is kind of a big topic in every podcast that we do, and that's the best way I can describe it, and I think you obviously from the sounds of it would agree with me. It's just something that gets in your bloodstream. And it is what it is. I find it a little bit interesting that your first foray into coaching was in football. Did you have a background in football as a high schooler, or more of just an interest in it and something that you could do? I mean, look, I've been around small high schools my whole life, and I know when you get to the college level, if you're willing to come back to your small school alma mater and coach something, they'll usually let you.
Yeah, there's no doubt about that. And that was, football was something I played in high school, and but that side of it, just of studying the game and understanding the game, really started to hit in football. I coached football for 20 years, even when I went to get in the Bryan, and even when I got the head coaching job at Bryan, I was still coaching football. Now, that side of it made it really hard at times, but it's something I really enjoyed, and I still enjoy watching football. I'm actually a part of the media now and cover some high school football games, and so I can study that side of it. So that football of that side of studying and coaching and really started to hit me with football. And again, I was very thankful for the opportunity that my alma mater, while I was taking classes at Defiance College, they let me coach. It was a great part time job if you really think about it. It was I was getting paid, and it was a part time job for me to do and be around sports, and it really got me going in that coaching side, and I learned so much in those first few years that a high school kid's not going to know just that side of coaching. And those first few years of coaching football and basketball really opened the door, got my eyes really open to what coaching is really like.
And Coach, the part that nobody tells you about when you're young and you're in college and you start coaching at the high school level is that if you pursue a career in education, you're actually shortening your retirement. You're creating a window, man. I you can tell I've reached my 50s. I think a lot more about those things than I ever used to. But so the football side of things, I have a former player that played for me for 1 year as a high school player who's coached high school and basketball and football at a couple different stops, and he talks incessantly about that the preparation in football it just doesn't get rivaled by many other high school sports. And this is a guy who takes basketball preparation seriously. Did you experience anything from the football side that you felt like, man, this might actually give me a real edge as a basketball coach?
Oh, hands down, without a doubt. There's still times where I take kind of that football practice format that I learned through coaching here at Antwerp. And when I got to Bryan at coaching, we're going to focus on our offensive concepts that are going to work this week on a Tuesday practice, for example. And we're going to focus defensively on Wednesday of how we're going to cover a ball screen or anything like that, the actions of our opponents on a Wednesday. And then we're going to bring this all together on Thursday. So that football format kind of stuck with me, where you know, how practices were broke down weekly, because, you know, in our area, you know, how we play in our schedule, we play Friday night league games in basketball, and then we play Saturday non-leagues. Very rarely do we get, you know, the Tuesday game. So you can break your week down of your opponent kind of in that similar fashion. So there were some similarities where, and Coach, you talk about preparation. I am really big on that preparation side of this is what I can do as a coach, is try to get our guys prepared. And, once it's up in the air and it's tipped off, you know, there's some things that are really out of our control as coaches, but I can try to do my best to have our guys ready to play. And, you know, I kind of carried that football approach of being prepped and breaking it down day by day over to basketball. And our kids kind of know what to expect each week on how we're going to prepare for opponents. And, you know, so they kind of have an idea of the way the practices are going to be laid out.
Well, I could dive into that with you and probably do a whole separate hour podcast. So I will resist that temptation and move us sort of. And you talked about the bug biting you, and it sounds like it got you really early, and that just coaching is who you are, a big part of who you are. And but when you think back on it to that degree, do you recall an individual either who coached you or you worked under when you first got started that really was impactful in that whole journey towards, I don't know, learning to manage the bug, I guess.
Yeah, you know, really right from the get-go, my high school football coach, Drew Aldemus, who is now my boss and athletic director here at Antwerp, just really opened my eyes on how to handle high school athletes, how to be there, both as a mentor and as a coach, as a you know, somebody as a leader, as a leader of a program, as a leader of an athletic department. You know, he just the way that he handles things really started. It's like, yeah, that's how I want to be able to model some things that I do if I ever continue on in this journey of coaching, how I want to be able to handle things. So he really got it going for me. And then I also coached under Tim Clemens here when I was at Antwerp, who was my high school coach, and how he handled things and prepped things, and how he really began to show things basketball-wise, and how he talked a game of basketball was really interesting and special to me. And then I worked for Scott McMichael. Scott McMichael is our head girls coach here now, and him and I coached together for a number of years. He's a longtime coach in our area. Does spectacular things. Did spectacular things when he was the boys' coach here, and did spectacular things, and is doing spectacular things on the girls' side right now too. So, you know, those three guys really were my foundation here at Antwerp of the coaching side of things. They really start to lay that out for me. And then I went to Brian. I'll never forget. You know, right out of college, when I graduated college, I thought, I'm going to stay at Antwerp. I've been here my whole life. I remember sitting and talking with Coach Aldemus in his gym while he's teaching a elementary phys ed class. Like, when I got offered the job at Bryan, he says, you have to take this. And I'm thinking, I don't know if I want to take this. I thought I was just going to be in Antwerp my entire life and live here and, you know, start my family here. And I didn't know what to do. And he goes, you have to take this job. And I went to Brian and got my feet wet in a new program, a new school system, a new league, a whole new division, new opponents. All those things really started to build even more of my coaching repertoire, and really one of the things. And I coached for 4 years as a JV coach at Bryan for Tim Meister. Tim Meister really was a coaching legend in the NWOAL for a long period of time, and I was very grateful to work under him for 4 years and learn the ropes of even more things of preparation and, you know, how to handle things on that side. So those guys really kind of laid this foundation for me. And honestly, Coach, I take a little bit from all of them. And I take a little bit of what we do from each coach. And I still hang on to some of those things. And, you know, I think that's really important. And those are really great coaching values that are a part of me and will remain a part of me for as long as I do this.
Well, and I think that's the best way to approach things. I do find it a little bit interesting that you said, you know, serving 4 years as a JV coach. Now, Bryan is a little bit bigger school than maybe the school that you attended, and there may be some differences. But I've been a believer for a long time, Coach, that if you really want to know whether or not you want to be a head coach, you got to be a JV coach. It'll test you. It'll have people in your ear saying you should be the head coach. We wish you were the head coach. The most popular guy on any high school basketball staff is the guy that's one seat away from the big chair. And
exactly.
So when you go into that spot and you're a young guy and you've got that only the experience at Antwerp, but a very good experience to lean on, can you talk a little bit about your JV coaching experience? And I had my college coach that I worked for as a student assistant was Joe Campoli for 2 years. And my first JV job was my fifth year of college. Don't get me into too many specifics about why I needed 5 years to get a 4-year degree, but my last year of college, I coached JV in the town where I went to school, and it wasn't a great experience. I came back to coach before the season ever started and said I should still be here. I think I made a mistake, and he said, no. Learning what you don't want to do is every bit as important as learning what you do want to do, and I took that with me through that whole really awful season to say, this is good for me. This is good for me. This is good for me. Now, not every experience has equal parts good and bad, but can you talk about your time as a JV coach and what it did for you in terms of when you became a head coach, what you drew from that specific experience?
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, that idea of the training in that JV role is in my eyes is really huge and beneficial, just like you talked about, Coach. And I had tremendous experiences as a JV coach in my two stops. And when I was a JV coach here at Antwerp, you know, working under Scott McMichael at that time, you know, him and I just, he was a new varsity coach, and he had some experience down in Florida as a girls varsity coach. But, you know, as far as head coaching experience here in Ohio, you know, he was kind of new to that. So we worked this thing together, and, you know, I felt I had a ton of responsibility towards him to help him and you know, help prepare the varsity guys, whether it be with my JV guys of getting them ready, or even they started, you know, he started me and giving me responsibilities early in the scouting side of things, which was really huge in my development as a coach. And when I went to Bryan, you know, Coach Meister was the same way. You know, my last couple of years, he started to give me the preparation, which when you look back on it, I don't know if it was good or bad, but, you know, the preparation of our non-league games on Saturday. So he focused primarily on the Friday games, the league games. And then I got a lot of the work and scouting of our non-league opponents. Now, here's the thing, Coach, you know, playing up at Bryan in our schedule, those non-league opponents included Ottawa Glandorf, included Defiance, included Van Wert, and, you know, Salina. I don't know, when I look back on it, if he was just throwing me out to the wolves or he said, here, you're going to learn, or you better learn quickly.
he was going to schedule in a way to help his team get better, and he was going to assign scouting in a way that he could blame the other guy if it didn't go well.
Yes, that's exactly right. Those were some really incredible experiences of getting my feet wet in that side of it, and quite honestly, just seeing a whole different level of basketball than maybe I had been exposed to in my time at Antwerp. But those experiences were huge, and you know, you're never really 100% ready to be a head coach, and I think you understand that, and you're never ready, but I guess if I was ever going to be close or even halfway, I guess those experiences as I was given as a JV coach were really huge in my mind.
Coach, I love when you say you're never really ready. When I was a head high school coach at one of the stops I had a JV coach for 1 year who had played a high level Division III college basketball, had a really good career, and I think was going to be a good coach, but he didn't enjoy being an assistant. He didn't like debating with me or discussing with me unless we did things what he wanted to do. And we had a little bit of a rough patch during that time. But he said to me at the end of that year, I applied for the job at such and such high school. Do you think I'm ready? And I said, yeah, I think you are. And he said, really? And I said, well, listen, I said, you don't want to be an assistant anymore. and you have an idea of what you want to do as a head coach. So you're ready. You aren't in any way prepared.
But absolutely. Those are different.
And he looked at me and goes, what do you mean I'm not prepared? I said, you haven't had a parent conversation yet. You're 24. I said, you're not prepared, but you're ready. I said, so take a swing and go.
Yes, you're exactly right. Those are not the same thing.
So when you think about being ready or prepared, you said two JV stints. Talk me through the chronology. So you left Defiance College. What year was it in your after college? How old were you when you started pursuing head coaching jobs?
Well, to be quite honest, I have had one basketball coaching interview. And it was when I came back to Antwerp and for that job. So I really never really was pursuing any type of head coaching opportunity. So I spent, so when I got the job right out of, a great story is that we did mock interviews after my student teaching at Defiance College. And I did a mock interview with Bryan High School principal Cameron Van Arzell. And I, like I said, I had coaching experience, which was huge on my resume at that point in time. And I had coaching experience in football, I had coaching experience in basketball, and I was a phys ed and health teacher. So this spot came open as a result, or this job was offered to me as a result of a mock interview in college. And quite honestly, and I've told this story a bunch of times, the real reason I got the job at Bryan is because I had coaching experience. So that time that I had spent in, coaching and through college got me the job because they were looking for a phys ed teacher. They were looking for an assistant football coach. They were looking for a JV basketball coach. And I checked those boxes, which, God works in a mysterious way sometimes. And he threw that in my lap, and it just was one of those things that came out. So I was 4 years as a JV coach right from college. So, when I got the call from Coach Meister that he was taking a superintendent's job at Archibald High School, and he said, I'm recommending you to the school board and the athletic director that you be the next head coach. After I picked my jaw up from the floor, I was a young coach I don't think I was ready, but Coach Meister, instilling that confidence in me that he was going to, that he wanted the program to remain in my hands was huge for me. And, that's when I was, 26 years old, and I was going to be a head coach in one of the best leagues in our area, in WOAL, and with tremendous coaches. And, that's another side of things. I mean, you're talking about Doug Krause at Archibald. You're talking about Ken Burgi at Wathion. And, and on our schedule, you have Kirk Lehman at Defiance. I mean, these are coaching legends in our area. And those guys were really true mentors to me. But they're gonna coach me under the bus every night, and so I had to learn quickly.
Well, and you touched on something there that I want to touch on briefly, and that is that you got your first job because you had coaching experience. And we've entered an era, Coach, when teaching and coaching don't go hand in hand anymore. In fact, it's become almost the exception rather than the rule. And I think you're at least a little bit familiar with TK Griffith, the head coach at Hoban High School, and he used to have a podcast, maybe still does, I just haven't followed up lately, called The Teacher Coach. That was his podcast. And can you talk a little bit about what you think are the important aspects of being a teacher and a coach?
First and foremost is you get to see your kids in a different aspect. That side of them, of them seeing you as a teacher and not just a guy, standing on the sidelines with a whistle and, that's on the basketball floor or the football field or whatever it may be. They see you in a different light in the classroom, in the hallways. And I think those are really important because then I really believe that you can connect teaching and basketball together. Where they're not just seeing you as a coach, if you can get that aspect of teaching in basketball as a part of what you do, they can connect those because they see you. And again, I don't want to say that coaches who don't teach aren't teachers of the game of basketball. That's not what I'm saying, but kids can start to make those connections and they can see you, whether some of those things as a teacher they see start to come out on the basketball floor when you're coaching, or maybe sometimes they see some of the coach come out of you in the classroom too. So, but they have an idea of really what you are, who you are, you know, as they see you someplace other than just on the hardwood. So I think that's really important. And you can start to build, you build different relationships with your guys in different ways. And that's another way that you can just build another relationship with your players is as a student and just not the player. So they know that they're going to care about, that you're going to care about them in more ways than just being a basketball player.
And coach, I wouldn't and ever in any way disparage, you know, coaches that aren't teachers. I mean, in this world, we have to have them. And some of the best guys in the business don't teach. But I've said this throughout my life, especially my 28 years in public education. I think it's true. And maybe it could be nitpicked a little bit, but I believe it's a true statement that not every really good teacher can make a good coach. But I think every really good coach could have been a great teacher. and that includes the guys that aren't in the classroom, that didn't pursue teaching as a career field, because what they do as coaches, it just translates so well. And I think had they gotten into pedagogy and things like that, we would have seen great teaching from guys and ladies that didn't pursue teaching as their career because they're good coaches. And there's so much crossover between the two. I couldn't agree more. We got about a 5 minute deal here before we got to take our break. So I want you to talk a little bit about your first head coaching job. Describe the program that you took over. And, you know, I used to ask this in almost every interview I had for a head coaching position. If I thought they were going to offer me the job, I would ask the administration that I was interviewing with, if you hire me day one, job one, what is it? And so I want you to talk a little bit about the program that you inherited and what you felt like day one, job one was for you.
Well, I think that, you know, the program that I took over, obviously I was 4 years a part of at that time, was really a solid basketball program. Now, Bryan High School Athletics is especially on the guy side, is really known for baseball in that area. And, you know, I was very fortunate to coach some really good basketball players that turned out to be spectacular baseball guys, honestly. I mean, Matt Whistler, who was a player for me, I just watched him pitch for the Toledo Mudhens on Saturday evening. And, you know, But those guys that were a part of that did so many great things for our basketball program, and that's a different side, another story for another time. But our program was really solid. You know, they'd been to the district tournament a couple times before I had taken over, and just they couldn't get over the Ottawa Glandorf hurdle at that time because OG was D2, and you know, hey, let's face it, not many people are able to conquer the Ottawa Glandorf hurdle. But that was kind of in there, something that kept stinging them. And so the basketball program itself was in really good shape, and we had our lumps early. I knew coming in that we had a good senior class that last year that I was there as JV coach, but I knew coming in we were going to have a lot of fresh guys on the varsity level. But our junior high programs were really, really solid, and they had kids in there that really loved basketball. They had parents in there that supported our basketball program. And I knew we were going to take some lumps early, especially playing our schedule and in our league, but we had to withstand that and establish what we wanted to do. And we were able, you know, to win an NWO title in our third year, which was really significant, for our program that we were building over there. And, you know, but I had great coaches that were with me, you know. You know, Mook Rufer, who was my JV coach in the first call that I had. Well, you know, his dad was a longtime head coach at Fairview High School, Ralph Rufer, and you know, he was assistant at Defiance College, so basketball was in his blood. And Mo Zuber is another guy that was with me for a long period of time. And Steve Lamberson, who was the head coach at Edgerton High School. Those guys helped to build and solidify what we were doing over there at Bryan. And they were right alongside with me the whole way. We were going to take some lumps, but we wanted to establish ourselves on what we wanted to do defensively, especially, and rebounding the basketball. And then we had skill development that was going to need to come, and we were going to really try to tackle those in our first 2 years. And, you know, I thought we did a pretty good job. And, you know, there may be people that think that we could have done better, but, you know, I thought our guys really, really started to lay a great foundation of where that program was headed.
Well, if you won a league title at Bryan in that league and with the history that you were dealing with, obviously you did some really good things. And you said, you know, win a league title in year three. That's almost if you were going to script it, you couldn't script it a whole lot better than in terms of creating buy-in and momentum for your program.
Absolutely. And, we had a good group of sophomores of 1 year, and we had one senior. I said, we got to ride these guys for as long as we can. And, that by the time they were seniors and we're playing in a league championship game against everybody on our home floor, and our gym was full. I mean, that's what high school basketball is about. And we told those guys, those seniors, that, that they helped build that. You know, I'm really big on talking to our guys about you create the opportunities that you want to be in and play in and all those things. So make sure that you're doing what you can and you want to create what you want, because, and those kids created that opportunity to play in some really fun environments and big games. And, and it came out with a league championship, and, that set the tone for what we were doing the next, 7 years of coaching there at Bryan.
Well, if you don't mind, we're going to go ahead and take our break now. I'd like to wrap up your Bryan experience and get into your decision to go back to your alma mater and talk about your Antwerp journey, and then get into some basketball and life things, if that's good with you.
Sounds great.
I just want to take a quick second and interrupt the podcast for a minute to remind you that our new platform for the podcast is Spotify for Podcasters. And if you're listening on Spotify, you have an opportunity to make a donation to the podcast if you would be inclined to do so. Thanks for considering any sort of donation. One-time, monthly, or other regular donations are certainly welcome. Spotify for Podcasters is our platform, and they're providing an easy option for you to do so just by clicking the link at the end of the episode. Thanks for your consideration, and now back to the podcast. So, Doug, you mentioned that you had spent 10 years at Bryan, and I don't want to minimize that time. We've got, obviously, a little bit of a limit on how long we can spend talking, but you had success at Bryan that, I'm just going to be blunt, hasn't been real typical at Bryan. And after 10 years, you had mentioned earlier in the podcast that you never thought you were leaving Antwerp. After 10 years at Bryan, did you start to develop the feeling that maybe this is it for me, this is going to be home, and this is how it works? And if you did, talk a little bit about, I guess if you did or if you didn't, talk a little bit about then the decision to leave Bryan and what ultimately led you back home.
That's a great question. And, quite honestly, at that time, I was 10 years as head coach at Bryan, 14 years altogether. And I ended up spending 15 years as a teacher at Bryan. So, I was there a long time, and I established, what I thought was a working program. I had great mentors there and, in the area. And, at that time, I thought we were established in Bryan, was going to stay in Bryan, with my family, for example. My wife, I had met her at that time, and we weren't married yet, and we were, she had two children from a previous marriage. And at that time, when my last year at Bryan, we were all set, all in. We were going to move to Bryan and started to enroll our kids in the school system at Bryan. And the job at Antwerp came open. And, it was just one of those scenarios where there was really no inclination of, me looking for a job, me changing jobs or anything to that nature. Certainly not really any inclination of me coming back to Antwerp to coach at my alma mater and move back home. There just really wasn't any discussion with that. And the job came open. And, again, like I mentioned, Drew Aldemus, the AD here, who's, I'm very close with and is a mentor to me and a friend to me, he calls me. And, in any opportunity previous where they had a coaching change and there was a couple there, he just kind of would shoot me a text, says, I know you're probably going to turn me down and shoot me down. But this time, this call was a little different because, my wife is an Antwerp grad as well. And, the thought of us coming home and, starting our family and enrolling our children here at Antwerp High School and or Antwerp local schools was very intriguing to us. And, that whole side of it was I was torn. I was really torn because my time at Bryan was great. I had great people to work with. I loved the kids. I loved my coaches. I knew saying goodbye was going to be really difficult if I decided to do that. And I tell you what, Coach, I'm an emotional person. I just remember when this was all starting to come down, and I had met with Coach Aldemus, and he goes, he basically told me, he said, this is yours if you want it. And I had some people around the area, around town here, that had contacted me in Antwerp as well. And I just remember sitting on the couch one evening with my fiance at the time, and I started to cry, you know, and I started to, it's like, this is going to be emotional. I'm going to do this. I'm going to do this. And, you know, the initial thought was, this is a family decision. This had really nothing to do with basketball or anything to that nature. This was what we thought was best for our family. And, you know, I'm going to jump head first into this, and this is going to happen. And I just, you know, my emotions came to me because I knew I was going to have to face, some high school kids and some of my coaches and some of the people that I got to know best over at Bryan Athletics. And I was going to have to, tell them I was taking a different position. And it, you know, if you've ever been put in that position, it's hard to do, especially when you're leaving on a great note and not a sour note or anything to that nature. You're still dealing with high school players and high school kids and their lives. And it was an emotional time. And, it was a hard decision. It was a very tough decision, but I know deep down, that was the best decision for our family. And, you know, there's, you know, looking back on it and reflecting on it as we do daily, and, you know, it was the right decision for us.
There is, I don't think, any spot in the world to be in that's more difficult than doing the right thing and knowing that you're hurting somebody by doing the right thing. And maybe it was more difficult in the moment, but now that you've had some separation from it and you look back, do you recall the responses that you got after you met with your guys at Bryan, your staff and your players? I mean, what was the response like? Was it affirming to your decision? Did it create more angst for you guys? How was that?
No, that's really, it affirmed the fact that I still think it was the right decision, but you know, the beauty of this is, you know, you get into coaching and you get into coaching because you love sports, most likely. But when you really start coaching and you coach for a long time, you love the relationships that you build. You know, you can go on. We talked off air on and on and on about the relationships you build with coaches. And the reason why you have this podcast is a part of that and is a testament to that. But the relationships you develop with your players are unreal as well. And that side of it, I still get text messages, calls, you know, I still get tweeted at, you know, whether we're having success over here or I see they're having some success over there, of kids I didn't even coach that were in our mini program over there that are still reaching out to me in various ways. And you know, the relationships that I've built with some families over there are still real. And, you know, those things are spectacular. And while I think the affirming part was that was the right decision to leave, but the best part was knowing that even now, when you look back on it, the relationships over there were as strong as ever, regardless of whether we were winning basketball games or not.
Well, that's part of the journey of any coach is making those decisions and seeing some things change. And Doug, I'd like to say that I think Northwest Ohio, where we're located, I can't imagine there are many places on the face of this country where more guys are at their alma mater doing good things. I mean, it just seems like almost a given around here that guys that get to their alma mater, they do a great job. And so you're a part of a group of guys, and I could list Kevin Sensabaugh at Spencerville or Tyson McLaughlin at Ottawa Glandorf, or, you know, there's a number of different people that have done what you've done, but you took a little bit of a different route. So what I'd like to get into is your evolution from that first job, first head coaching job, especially to coming back. Can you talk a little bit about who you were when Bryan hired you to be a head coach and kind of what was your why then and what had evolved or developed in you by the time you got that Antwerp job?
Yeah, there's so many things that you take and you hold on to as learning experiences. And, you know, early on, it was in my coaching career, it was just one of those things where, yeah, we had a little bit of success. winning some league championship. But there were still those things that you had in the back of your mind where they were kind of confidence level things. Am I really doing this the right way? Is there something else I should be doing? Coach Krause at Archibald is doing it this way. What can I take from them? All those things come into play, especially early on in your coaching career. And, I wasn't built upon the relationships with my guys as much as I wanted to be in that first part of my coaching career. I was angry at times, miserable at times. Going into practice and I wasn't myself in some of those aspects in my early coaching career. I had some moments there when, I started doing a lot of reading about things and, my faith grew stronger and some of those things. And it changed the way I wanted to approach things and I had to approach things. And now, it's a part of, there's still some core things that I truly believe in. But also you have to understand that, part of our players' experience is how you handle things, and you are a part of how they experience basketball, and they experience learning basketball, and they experience the life lessons that they take from basketball. So, those things really started to change. I wanted to make sure that it was almost like the mentor side of me started to overtake how I wanted to approach this, and it started to grow probably really after my fifth or sixth year as head coach over at Bryan. It started to grow of where I wanted to teach other things involved within our program, and it's not just about winning basketball games, X's and O's all the time. We had to throw other things in there to try to teach some things, and I think we do a pretty good job of it now, and how we do some of those things, but there's more than basketball to be taught. We have to use this as a great platform, and I started to come into that a little bit more, and it's really a part of our program here now at Antwerp.
Well, you used the word program a few times in discussing Bryan, discussing Antwerp, and look, there's I can't say anything new about the concept of what it is to have a program, and everybody has one. It's this, they're not all created equal. A program is an all-inclusive term that for a lot of young coaches, our program is, what are we doing with Biddy Ball? What are we doing with junior high? How are we melding our feeder program into what we teach? And it really is X and O driven. Can you talk about your program and maybe what has really developed, anything specific that's not related to the X's and O's and not related to the necessarily skill or talent development as much as it is the development of the whole?
Yeah, absolutely. That's a tremendous question. And, I started to, really to think about this and how, you build it from the top down, which it's kind of opposite when you think about building things. But, and what I mean by that is you've got to use your players that your feeder programs, your minis, all these people that they see perform on a Friday night or a Saturday night. You got to use those kids to be faces of your program and have them be a part of what you're doing and what you're building and what it looks like. Because, if your program means anything to you and what you want it to look like, those kids are going to model what those things, whether it's hard work, it's discipline, it's being a good person, it's interacting with these kids. Part of that is, some family things outside of basketball, things like that. And they're just really good kids, and they are really good kids. But the other side of it is that interaction comes from the top down and really starts to build a love of basketball, builds a foundation of basketball for those younger kids. And they see it, when they have an interaction with Jagger Landers, who's a player for us, he was one of the best players ever to walk in the halls of Antwerp High School. If they have an interaction with a Jagger Landers on a Tuesday or a Saturday at our minis, and then they see him performing on a Friday night, they're going to remember that. They're going to remember those interactions, and that's going to help to build that foundation. And you kind of talked a little bit about the X's and the O's and the skill set. Those are all, everyone does those things. But if you can try to build relationships within your program to where those kids, you know, then it pays it forward, because by the time that they're seniors, they're going to do it to the second, the third graders of that time. So I just trying to get your kids to interact with everybody and build that program, I think is really key. And, especially when you have really good kids that are good mentors to some of these young players, it just kind of fits in.
So if you get your high school players to embrace the idea that they are the face of something bigger than them, and they invest in that, and that naturally feeds your program's identity. The other side of that same coin is getting to understand what it is that they value about the program. They know and embrace what their role is, but what do they value about the program? So we were talking before we started recording the second segment here. If I went to Landon Brewer, or you mentioned Jagger Landers, if I went to Jagger and said, look back on your high school experience, what was your favorite part of Antwerp basketball? Do you envision him talking about things that aren't related to big wins before he gets to, you know, being in the regionals, or what do you think those guys would say stands out to them about the program at Antwerp?
I think the spirit that they left in our building about our basketball program is going to come up. You mentioned a couple guys in Landon and Jagger, and we have a guy at Bowling Green State University who's a pitcher right now too, and Luke Krause. And even when Luke was in high school, and Luke and Jagger in the media sessions and those things that we had when we had our state run and a few years ago, those things, he would talk about the spirit of basketball in our building. It's like it's our building was just different, and I think those kids, we're a K-12 building, so mm-hmm. You're walking the halls with kindergartners and preschools and all these elementary kids, and when you're walking down the hallway and you are Jagger Landers, Landon Brewer, Luke Krause, and you're giving high fives to these kids, those are special things. And when they get excited about that, I guarantee that they're going to talk about that environment and that spirit of basketball that they left and really, it's kind of hung around and continues to hang around in our building about, that Archer, that Archer spirit. And it just changes your school culture. And it just changes how the building is. It changes the vibe in the building. It's really an exceptional thing to be a part of.
Well, I love the phrase Archer spirit, and it actually feeds into my next question, because, without rehashing a lot of the specifics, and it would mean something to some of our listeners, it wouldn't to others, but you guys have had a remarkably successful run over the last 2 to 3 to 5 years, specifically with your teams, and, in that realm or run of time when you had just incredible talent. And so you mentioned the phrase Archer spirit. I'd like to talk a little bit about how your program moves beyond that and moves forward from it, and doesn't, how do you keep your guys from, and your staff, and maybe some of your older guys that are still there? How do you keep them from living in the past? What's the carrot for them now, and how does it connect to that whole Archer spirit concept?
That's it's something that's discussed in every single workout session, practice, whatever it is we always talk about, you got to be where your feet are. And right now there's, those numbers on the board and the banners and the pictures in our gym mean something. It just means something now. It's a standard. And I think that's really important. So, that standard exists, and it exists as a standard, and it's just a bar that you have to work to climb over the top of each and every year. And, it's not just the standard of, you have to go to state every year. That's not what it is. It's just you have to maximize your performance. And how do you do that? You work, you prepare. There's no, we did this last year, we have to do it this, we have to do it this way all the time. No, those aspects are done, and what we did last year, we're going to take some of those things, but you have to build your own identity. And so be where your feet are, understand the standards and the pillars that got you those things. But, we also have to build our own identity for this team. And they hear it. They sometimes probably roll their eyes at me if they hear it too much. Be where your feet are. build your own, those things are echoed constantly within our practices, and they know. And our seniors do a great job of just taking that to the next level each and every year.
Well, I would like to get into a little bit of I guess that side of things. Now you've been a head coach now for a long time by anybody's definition. And you touched a little bit about on your own evolution into what your why is and how that's kind of shifted, but your how matters too. And especially in coaching, when you look at the way you coached at 26 and the way you're coaching today from a practice and a teaching standpoint, what stands out to you as the way things have maybe changed the most? And what I'm really kind of aiming at here is there are multiple schools of thought, but I think there's been a real move toward more 5-on-5, more game-like practice, less, focus on individual drill work. I think that's been kind of the trend, so to speak, not saying one is better than the other. But if you looked at yourself as a coach from your how perspective, how you do things, what's been your evolution from when you started to today?
Yeah, I think we're just kind of the opposite of the trends of today. We spend a lot of time with footwork skill. When I talked about our practice breakdowns, our Monday practices are all antwork. It's all about antwork, all about us, all about what we think that we need to work on, do, get better shots, all those things. We still do a decent amount of skill work in our practices. And we do a lot of side games, 2-on-2, 3-on-3, those types of scenarios, As a week progresses, for example, we get to our 5-on-5 stuff, but we do a lot of breakdown things. Even in our scouting prep, as I've learned, sometimes to get your JV kids to run a base offense of an opponent, you can pull your hair out multiple times. So we've adjusted to where we just break those things down. All right, if a team is running ball screen motion or a team's running flex, for example, we're gonna break down these aspects. So today we're gonna work on the flex cut and down screen. What are we doing with that? So we're gonna play 3-on-3. We're gonna work on flex cut down screen, and we're gonna break that down. So we've really, if a team has a favorite set where you get a shuffle cut into a double, we're gonna break that down. Some of those things. So we've actually gone the opposite way, where we spend a lot of times of breaking the things down and then building towards the 5-on-5 towards an end of the week, for example. And that's helped us. It's helped our kids recognize some of those things.
Well, and I love the way you describe it, because I think it probably helps you in the postseason too, when you've got a little bit less time for turnaround and you do more midweek stuff than you're used to in the regular season. If you can talk about the way that you approach guarding, shuffle cut, staggered screen, or a staggered screen into a step up ball screen, that kind of stuff, you can guard it 3-on-3, and everybody gets a real familiarity with the concept. So it should, I think, translate a little better. But do you find it a little more difficult now? It just feels like, maybe I'm wrong, but it feels like so many people are playing five out now that a lot of those pet actions, that they're just not as common. So if you see them, it's a lot less frequent. How do you deal with the similarity that seems to exist with the way so many people play today? Five out and a lot of ball screen stuff.
You got to have good, solid concepts, I believe, in place. And, we play a little bit different at times. So we switch 1 through 5 on our screens, which a lot of teams, don't do or whatever. We saw that we've been able to have some success switching 1 through 5. And, so our kids have to rely on the concepts of what we need to do to switch, step back to the basket so you don't get slipped on and some of those other things. But as we progress, we don't have as much size as we've had in the past. So we've had to add some examples where we're not switching on one guy. That's really complicated to do with high school kids. We want to keep this guy firm on a big. We don't want to switch off of him. So we got to make sure that we communicate extra and those types of things. That's hard to do for high school kids. So we had to be really, really strong in our base setup and really strong in our fundamentals of how we're defending things. And you got to be really sure on those aspects. And I think our guys pretty much are.
Understanding that you won't always have Luke Krause and Jagger Landers and Landon Brewer and that type of talent every year, particularly at a smaller school. So it you said it doesn't change the expectation for what you expect from your guys. How do you approach the idea of teaching a concept of 32 minutes of Archer, of Antwerp Archer basketball? In your mind's eye, what does 32 minutes of basketball your way look like?
It's a great question. Yeah, it's some of our pillars that we deal with obviously, you approach the game with a tremendous teamwork, communication. You have great gratitude towards playing the game of basketball. And you're selfless, you know, and those are things that obviously we talk often about, and there's some coach talk to those, and I understand that, but they mean something to our guys. And, you know, I give you a quick example. You know, we practice when a guy dies on the floor, a guy's laying on the floor, he's taking a charge or something like that. We practice having four other players on the floor sprint to him and help him up. I think those things are tremendous. I think those things, you know, screen things about your program and how you do things. We practice running off the floor and going down the entire bench and giving a five to the entire bench and then coming and sitting and listening to a coach. We practice those types of things. Only because I think little things are important. I think little things like that are important to what you look like as a program, detail-oriented type of things as a program. And you know, I like those types of things to be said about our basketball team. They play hard, they play good defense, they rebound. Those are great things, but they're very detail-oriented. They're selfless. They have great teamwork. They communicate well. I mean, those things I think are, and they play the game with gratitude. I think is important too. So I think those are part of who we are as Antwerp basketball players.
If you don't mind me asking, and maybe if it's too specific or put you on the spot, I apologize. But if you talk about your guys playing the game with gratitude, I absolutely love the concept. I think it's a huge concept. Do they embrace or have a real clear understanding of what that looks like? I mean, what's the action that indicates to you that they're playing the game with gratitude?
It comes out in their body language. It comes out in how they take coaching. It comes out that they are given this opportunity to play. You know, for example, we watch on film quite often. It says if you miss a shot and you're running down the floor and you're letting that affect you, it's not being grateful for being an opportunity to play this game. It's not being grateful for the opportunity to be a teammate, because your teammates are all counting on you now. Even though you missed a shot, they're still counting on you to defend, and they're counting on you to do their part. So just remaining in that moment that, hey, you're still having this opportunity to be here and play this great game of basketball. And that's, you know, those things are resonate, you know, as you come off the floor, what your body language look like when you're on the bench, all those things. You know, is your shirt tucked in at practice? Those little types of things that bring gratitude towards the fact that, hey, I get to be here. I get to play. I am where my feet are, and I get to come to practice every day. All those things I think are important.
All right, Coach. So the idea of what you value with your guys is clear. And obviously there's been a great deal of investment from your guys into making it real, and your program has had success. That a lot of our podcasts are built around, you know, the ideas and things that lead to success. Not everybody has the same level of success that you have described, and you may not always have that level of success. But one of the reasons that I was drawn to you as a person in the coaching profession is that my awareness of you was based more on the idea that you're a man of faith than it was that you're going to have, you know, a team that ends up in the state Final Four, which you did after I got to know who you were. Can you talk a little bit about, and I mentioned it before, aligning your why with your how? Your why has evolved from the time you were a 26-year-old first-year head coach to where you are today. Your why for doing it has changed. But I think who you are has also changed and evolved and developed in a way that, you know, your why for doing coaching and your how you go about it could be, if you let it be, in conflict with the other aspects of your life, but your family, you've mentioned several times during the podcast, and you are a person whose faith is incredibly important. Can you talk a little bit about what it's like for you and how you approach trying to balance all of those things?
Absolutely. And you really hit the nail on the head with it. My why has really affected my how. And, I may mention a little bit before about, fifth or sixth year of coaching, my why was a little bit misaligned, and it really wasn't great, and had an effect really on my how and how I was going about things. And it started to change, and a lot of those things started to come along with it, including my faith. Including in there is my change in my home life with my family and children and all those things. And but those things really have changed how I go about my business as trying to be a mentor to young people. And there's so many things that have resonated from that, and I'm so excited. I just to give you a quick example with that, I teach a leadership class now that talks about these different things, and that's a huge thing that I take pride in, and I'm super excited about each year as I go into teaching. But long before I started coaching, you have to make sure Coach Clemens used to tell me, you got to make sure that you put your imprint of who you are on your program and what that made and what that looks like. And, my imprint of who I was on our program really wasn't who I wanted to be, and really wasn't who I thought I was. And those things needed to change with me. And like I said, it started with my faith and how I go about those things, and that has resonated into my teaching as well. And I believe that God had a plan for me, and his path for me has come this way down this path here at Antwerp, and I think that he wanted me to be here, and my faith has grown stronger in that aspect, and it continues to be a part of who I am, and it continues to be a part of who my family is. It continues to be a part of what I do, and I needed to be myself, and I needed to be have myself be an imprint on our program, and my values of what that looked like needed to come forth. And I'm not saying that we teach faith here at Antwerp or anything like that, but my players know that about me, and I think that's really important. And my family knows that that's important to me, and I think that's really important. I had somebody tell me one time, said, there's different ways to teach. There's obviously ways that you can teach and communicate, but there's also ways of action. And this I have this in the back of my mind every day. If my kids, my own children, my personal children, can see me doing things the way that I want to do them, in the way I'm going to want them to do them, if they catch me doing something right, I think that's big. And if my players catch me working hard, or they catch me in a moment where it's really tough and it's really chaotic, and they see me calm, they catch me in that moment, that calms them. Those things, if kids can see you, can catch you modeling behavior on a consistent basis, they know what you stand for. I'll give you a quick example. I try to show love to our family, and I show love to my wife. So my kids know how important love is, and showing people love. And if they can catch me doing those things, I think that's really big than just always constantly telling them. So modeling behavior, I think, is really key. And I hope that people can see what I believe in, and what's important to me, and what, how faith has played a role in my life.
You mentioned really early in the podcast that you tend to be a pretty emotional person, and that resonates really well with me. I'm a very highly emotional guy, and sometimes it's manifests itself in ways that I'm not real proud of, and other times it manifests itself in, I think I do vulnerability really well, and it just comes naturally to me. But I also know that maybe the single biggest challenge to being a person of faith is the minute that is declared publicly, there are people who can't wait to identify the inconsistency so they can call it hypocrisy. And it's a really big challenge to be a person of faith and to wear it and to own it and to be public about it. But yet you do that. Have you experienced challenges like that? And how do you manage those challenges? Because we're all going to have moments of being human. Most of our time is spent being human, not being above what would be considered quote unquote normal. I mean, being people of faith doesn't exempt us from that. And you're going to have those challenges. How do you manage that? And the reason I mentioned that is because I think the vulnerability piece is part of it, but how does it work for you?
Yeah, we all have those moments, and we all have those moments, and we're not perfect. Obviously, we're not perfect in God's eyes, and we all have those moments, and those things are going to exist, and it becomes a time where you need to get back, to those places where you can remain calm. You can get yourself back to that moment of peace. Whether you get excited at halftime of a game, which we've all experienced. My players have experienced that for me. And we have those moments of competitiveness, and they know. And I talk about it openly to our guys. I say I have my moments. I'll give a quick example. I got a technical. I haven't had a technical foul in probably 15 years. And I get a technical in a JV game this past year. And it was a moment. It was a moment with an official, and he teed me up, and obviously you get a technical in our program, you have extra things that you need to do. I come into practice the next day and I'm running my sprints. I'm modeling the behavior that I need to. I told our kids, it got the best of me. It happened. I'll learn from it. I'll be better. And I'm going to take my punishment. And those things are going to happen. And like you said, there's those times where people want to call you out for those types of things. But if you can recognize your mistakes, which sometimes is very hard for people to do, if you can recognize where you made a mistake and you can and readily acknowledge it, so that's okay, because we're human. God knows that we're human, and God knows that we're going to fail and have sinned at those times. So recognize it, fix it, and move on. That's something that we try to talk to our guys. Recognize, fix it, move on, and those types of situations are going to happen.
No technicals in 15 years. My man, I don't know how that's possible.
That's something that I've really, truly grown a little bit. I will say that. But it was just one of those things that happened this year. And I did have to profusely apologize to our JV coach, because I got in the JV game and he lost the bench from there on out. He had to sit down.
I coached JV for a couple different guys, and the first game of my first year working with one of the guys, first JV game of the year, first year working with the guy, he got a technical 3 minutes in to the JV game, and I thought, well, I guess this is going to make me sit and behave a little bit, which wasn't necessarily in my wheelhouse. Now, you mentioned one other thing that I would like to touch on very briefly, just because, again, the life part of basketball is what the podcast is about. You're a part of a blended family. You said your wife had children before you guys were married, and I'm a member of the blended family club. Look, there's no manual on how you do a lot of things. If you waited until you were ready to be a parent, you'd never have kids. If you waited till you were ready to be a head coach, you probably would never become one. But of all the things I've experienced in my life, there is nothing that is more of I got to fly by the seat of my pants and figure this out than being a stepdad, being part of a blended family. Can you talk about what that's been like for you, and how maybe your role in coaching and your basketball program has helped with that?
Absolutely. I grew up in a blended family as well. I had a tremendous stepfather. He was a big part of my life, growing up through school and through high school. My father was in my life, so I mean, it was. I kind of had the best of both worlds. I had a lot of really great mentors in my life that I could learn from. And, you know, I kind of just take those experiences and that I had growing up and try to be the best that I can and make the experience for my children the best that they can and you know, show love to them and be that figure and be that fatherly figure that they need. And, you know, my two stepchildren, Avery and AJ, are fantastic. AJ's been a part of our basketball family here at the school as a manager for a long time. And now my other two children, Sailor and Bowen, are following right in those same footsteps. And, you know, my stepdaughter Avery, who's an eighth grader, I've tried to learn. I had to learn that side of it pretty quickly of do I want to be coach or do I want to be dad when she comes home after a game? She plays three sports, and there's moments where, you know, where coach comes out, and it's usually about things that I would get talked about at home, body language, effort, those types of things that I'm gonna let her know about it. And, the side of basketball, I've learned and I'm very grateful that I've learned that, you know, when she wants to know, she knows where she can come and ask. And I think having that aspect of it where I wasn't going to go and push it on her and say, hey, let's work on this, let's do this. You know, let's wait until those moments start to come up and she comes and talks and she'll come and ask about it. And those came. And now I'm very grateful that they came. And I'm very grateful that I didn't push for it, because our relationship is very strong in that. And now I that foundation has been laid with all of our children. I think where, you know, dad's going to be dad first. And if you want him to be coach, he can be coach. And he can help you with those things and use that as a resource. And, you know, I want my kids to be coached by other people. I think that's really big. Go be coached by other people. Listen, there's a million ways to do this. There's a million facts and figures that you need to listen and all these other things. But when you want me to be coach, I'll be coach, and I'll help you through things. And I think that's been a great foundation for all of our children to see. And that's really helped me as we go forth and we start to raise our other children if they decide to go into athletics.
My man, I can't tell you how much I appreciate your time. I told you I was going to try to keep this thing to an hour, and I didn't really respect that very well, but I thought there was real value in this last little bit of the segment. And I just appreciate your time so much.
Thanks, Coach. And I'm really blessed and honored to be asked to do this. Like I said before, we've had so many great people on this podcast, and their stories are probably a little bit more interesting than mine, but I love listening to it, and I'm really honored to be a part of this and be able to just to talk a little bit about my journey in basketball and certainly the outside things that are really important to me. So thank you for this opportunity. I'm truly grateful.
I wouldn't have continued the podcast if I didn't have a chance to have you on. I mean that sincerely. So I hope we can get together sometime soon and catch up, maybe catch a lunch or a dinner. And I'm sure I'll be checking your team out when the season gets here. It's almost upon us, man.
Get quick, and it's going fast. But yeah, I appreciate that. I would love to catch up.
Take care, brother.
All right, thank you.
Hi, I'm Coach John Cook, and this is the Basketball and Life Podcast. Thanks so much for tuning in and checking this one out. If you're listening on Spotify, courtesy of our platform, Spotify for Podcasters, you have the opportunity to make a donation to the podcast. If you would be inclined to do so, there's a link at the bottom of the episode that will allow you to make your donation in whatever amount you would choose to do so. If you're listening on any other platform, I just ask that you please rate, review, and subscribe, and come back anytime to check out more episodes here on the Basketball and Life Podcast.